Welcome back to Shattering This. We have both Larry and Glenn on the line, and both individuals are live here with us. Let's begin with you, Larry. That was a pretty sobering 2 hours. What do you think? Hello, Larry. Larry, we've got you here live, but we don't hear you. How about Glenn? Same question to you.
I am here. You can hear me.
I can, Glenn. Go ahead. Thank you.
Very good. Well, offhand, I'd have to say that everything is progressing according to plan. Not Yahweh's plan, but he foretold the plan long ago.
Yes.
It seems to me that this chaos, I mean, I think we're looking at some amazing use of Hegelian dialectic here. You've got the dialectic of Shiites versus Sunnis, which allows for another dialectic of that area of the world versus the West. The chaos that's going to be fomented with all the factionalism and fragmentation over there will be used as an excuse to implement tyranny in the West. And then when things reach their sufficient crescendo, they'll need a unifying influence for all these fragmented factions, which might take form of a common enemy. Jim, I wonder who that could be.
Yeah. Let me see. I wonder. First, let me make a couple of comments on what you just said. First, you said it's all going according to plan, but it's not Yahweh's plan. That's brilliant. We were told the plan. Yes. We know exactly what's going to happen. Everything that I discussed with IQ, I was discussing, and just to expose the fact that there is nothing that can be done that's going to resolve this problem, because this is exactly what God told us was going to happen. Now, what you really have right now is a battle between the different sects of Islam with the Christian countries supplying all the weapons. And the reason that Christian countries are supplying the weapons is that Islam is so overtly stupid that there isn't an Islamic country in the world that can manufacture the kinds of weapons that are capable of mass destruction. So all the weapons are coming from the West because there is no Islamic nation that's capable of making these weapons. So we're providing the means to death, and they're providing those who are implementing, managing the death of so many. The reality is that all of this was predicted, and that all of it is savage, and it's all on our doorstep. And the one thing I would hope, Glenn, in all of this, is that those who are listening, those whose eyes are open, that realize there is no hope in man. Our military made this situation worse. They can't protect you. They can't save you. They can't ensure your freedom. They can't ensure your life. Our government is not only not capable of resolving this, everything our government has done has made it worse. Right. And academia doesn't seem to be able to tell the truth to save their life. And the media is misreporting everything. Maybe it's time, folks, that you realize that if there's any hope, the hope is not in any human institution. Perhaps if this is the time before it's too late that you turn to Yahweh and consider his plan.
I mean, I just always think of, Yahweh told some pretty disturbing parables. You know, two of the most disturbing parables Yahusha told with a parable of the sower, where some of the seed goes off the wayside is eaten by birds. Some of the seed is springs up in shallow soil and, you know, pops up and then dies. Some of it is choked out by weeds, and then some remaining percentage lands in good soil and grows. That is one of the scariest parables of Yahusha. The other one is the parable of the virgin, the bridesmaids. You know, those who keep their
right.
trimmed and their lamps full and are ready for the arrival of the groom.
Right.
When it's time to go in the wedding feast, they're ready.
Right.
And you have all these people who didn't pay attention.
Not ready. Correct.
And, you know, you also pretty much described the behavior of man, you know, in those two scary parables.
So you and I are on the same page here, which is that if you're listening, whether this thing, you hear what we've been talking about in the last 2 hours, whether you hear it as you're streaming this program now, or you hear it in an archive, or you hear it because this program is posted elsewhere. Don't wait. Don't wait. Open the Torah. Consider what God has to say. You can go to yadayah.com. You can go to introtogod.org. But you need to consider who Yahweh is. You need to consider the terms and conditions of his covenant. You need to embrace his Torah teaching and guidance, because, folks, you don't have much time.
Exactly.
And this is the only hope, because we're in a tremendous mess. Stay with us, Glenn. We also have Don on the line. I'd love to hear what Don has to say. Hi, Don. How are you?
Good morning. You made a big mistake.
Uh-oh. Go ahead.
You asked me back. You invited me back. You sent me an email, call back.
Yeah.
So this is your fault.
Okay. Were you able to listen to the any part of the 2 hours? I know you don't have a very good internet connection where you are.
I got the last of it, and IQ and you, I wish, weren't so close to the vest. I wish just once you guys would open up and really tell us what you think.
Yeah, we are convinced, and thus far over the past 13 years, everything we have said was going to happen has happened, and I would not bet against us at this point. I suspect that what we're witnessing right now is the prelude to World War III, that what's happening in Syria and Iraq and throughout North Africa cannot be stopped, and it's going to be genocidal, and that we have lit this wildfire that's not just going to ravage the North Africa and the Middle East. It's going to ravage all of the world.
I want to thank Glenn for calling in with all of his remarks. They are really thought-provoking. And I will add something to you and IQ, that rational thinking does not prevail anywhere in the intellectual field or in the theological field. Therefore, 90% of the people that are listening either are of that ilk, and what you've done in the last week or two has just been remarkable in using the teaching on the Mount as a foundation for a few rational thinkers. What do you think of that?
I think you and Glenn would be in agreement, as am I with you, that while with religious people, evidence and reason does not prevail, and it does not prevail with political individuals. If you're overtly political or overtly religious, evidence and reason will not resonate. And that what you have now expanded that to say that in academia, in the scholarly circles, evidence and reason aren't going to resonate either. I concur, and the reason there is because of the wholesale ingestion of political correctness, where exercising good judgment is considered the ultimate sin. All that being true, Don and Glenn, I am convinced, based upon the emails that I receive regularly from around the world, that there is a very significant percentage of the population that has ceased to be political, that has ceased to be religious, and is earnestly trying to find the truth, and that those individuals are open and receptive to what Yahweh has to say, and so that we can benefit them. And there's lots of them.
Could that be a resurrection of Hezekiah?
Yeah, to a large degree, I think so. You know, what Don is mentioning here is identical, really, to what Glenn said in the parables that he shared. But what Hezekiah did is that Hezekiah recognized that that the Assyrians were unstoppable, that there is nothing that Israel had done or could do that could slow down the Assyrian assault, that the northern kingdom, which was Israel, was already destroyed, gone. Ten of the 12 tribes are obliterated. They don't even know. They're lost. Their cities are all razed to the ground. There's nothing left. And Egypt was unable to stop them. The Hittites were unable to stop them. They were on their way to capture the last holdout in Yehudah, and they're coming with 185,000 of the best-trained, best-equipped warriors in the world. And Hezekiah said, you know, our military has not protected us. Our diplomatic alliances have not protected us. We've tried to bribe them into staying away from us through tribute payments. That has not worked. Perhaps now we need to deploy the only thing that is reliable, and that is Yahweh himself. And so Hezekiah did with his country exactly what we're trying to encourage people to do now. Give up on your government, give up on your military, give up on your religion. In fact, what's the first thing that Hezekiah did when he decided that he was going to rely on Yahweh as opposed to his military and diplomacy? What's the first thing that he did?
Oh, he fell on his face and dropped to his knees.
Well, he—that wasn't really the—that wasn't the answer. No, that's not what he did. What he did is, yeah, I know you're Don being humorous here, that he was—he returned to a religious act. No, what he did is he told everyone that would listen. He says, "I want you to rid Yehudah of every vestige of religion. Wherever you see a religious icon, artifact, symbol." No matter where you see any vestige of religion, get rid of it. And that's the first thing he did. He just said that I know we can't as a people come to trust and rely on Yahweh and get him to save us unless first we eliminate all things that are religious. It's the first, it's a requirement of participating in the covenant. God's not going to save anyone who's not in the covenant. And so he realized that the first requirement of the covenant was to walk away from religion. He cleansed Yehudah, Judah, of religion. That's the first thing he did. And what's the second thing he did? He says, you know, we're going to rely exclusively on Yahweh instead. And we can do that by making his Torah our primary source of instruction as to how we live our lives. We'll be back with Glenn and with Don. And I even think we have Larry. After to Shattering Myths, we have Larry, Glenn, and Don all on the line. I know, Larry, you've called in several times today. I would love to hear your input to what we talked about, which is world calamity, the destruction of civilization as we know it, all beginning right there in where Assyria and Babylon once ruled the world.
Well, I, you know, I don't have a lot to add with what's been said. I think that Glenn hit it right on the money, but I have to tell you, I think you missed your calling, Yada.
Uh-oh, what? What should I be doing?
You should have ran the State Department. I mean, you only told them this was going to happen back when Bush was president. What the hell?
Yeah, yes.
So you're the man.
Yeah, right. Well, they unfortunately, if you advocate the truth, you're not very, you're certainly not welcome in the U.S. government. So I can't imagine anyone who is willing to tell the truth being popular there. I can tell you that
what a little tongue in cheek. I'm just saying, if you can sit here, and I don't know what you're. Academic qualifications are to run the State Department apparently doesn't matter and be correct, and all these geniuses can't be correct while they arm one side and send them in just like they did in Syria or doing in Syria, just like they did in Libya, just like they're doing now,
right.
And then the American taxpayer pays for it. I wonder what genius thought that there could be any other outcome. And I'll just hang up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's what your point is absolutely valid, Larry. There was no way to have a different outcome. It's what Don has also said is absolutely true, which is that the Hezekiah approach is the only approach. Hezekiah did not say, you know what we really need to do? We've got 185,000 of the best equipped, most effective troops in the world. It would be like having all of America's military bearing down on you. It would be is exactly what Hezekiah was experiencing. And, you know, I've read that story a lot of times. Never once in that story did I hear Hezekiah say, you know, what we really need to do is beef up our military. If I could only get you to spend a little more money on your military and let's get a bigger army. He didn't say that. He didn't say, you know, what we need to do now is we need to start negotiating with the Assyrians, a little peace conference. Didn't say that. He didn't say, you know, what we need to do is start praying. We need to get all the religious clerics together. Maybe we can pray our way to it. He didn't do that either. What he did is say, let's get rid of religion. Let's completely ignore the military. Do away with it. Let's instead trust Yahweh completely. And what they found is that Passover and unyeasted bread and Bukkotim were fast approaching. And Hezekiah says, you know, he's talking to Yahweh. He says, Yahweh, yeah, I'm doing everything I can to prepare so that we can actually celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim, which I understand is your means to save us. But I can't get it done this quickly. Can I have an extension of time? So I won't be doing it on the right date, but we'll be doing it the right way. We'll do it with understanding. Can I have an extension of time? God said, yeah, fine. No problem. And then they celebrated Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim, which is the means to salvation. And guess what happened to the Assyrians outside the gates of Jerusalem? They all died. Every one of them died. Gone. And then what did they decide? Okay, so we partied our way through the world superpower surrounding us, has already destroyed every community, every town, every city in Israel. We're the only one that remained. They have defeated every military in the known world. And they're just gone because we chose to rely on Yahweh and his plan. And we met with him during his parties. They said, hey, you know, this partying stuff with God is really fun. Can we do it for another week? And God said, fine. Let's party together for another week. You got no threat now. I've saved you. That really is the solution, guys. You know, Iran and Iraq is where Babylon and Assyria once were. They're as menacing today as they were back then. And our military can't save us. Our religion can't save us. Our prayers can't save us. Our academics most certainly can't save us. There's only one document that can save us. And it can't save us collectively, but it sure as heck can save us individually.
Absolutely.
It's time we turn to the Torah. It's time we turn to Yahweh. It is time that those of you who don't want to endure the sting of death and destruction, that you consider participating in the family that God has offered, and he then will keep you from it. He will protect you through it. He will take care of his children, but no one else. Welcome back to Shattery Myths. We've got a conversation here with Don and Glenn. Glenn, in addition to the two parables, which speak of our time and being prepared, Do you also concur that perhaps this is also a Hezekiah moment?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think it'll turn the situation around. I believe that the fruit of such an effort would merely be an increase in the ranks of those who accept God's covenant. It's yes. not to save the worldly or the world system per se, but to gather in God's remnant and mm-hmm. turn those who aren't paying attention.
Yep. In fact, your point there is, I'm really glad I asked you this question because we aren't in a Hezekiah moment. We are individually. We are not as a nation. Hezekiah did something on behalf of the nation of Yehuda, and yes. That is not so. It is a Hezekiah moment for us individually, not nationally.
Yes.
So, Glenn, your input there is absolutely correct. And what we mean by that is, for all of our listeners, is that there is a 0% possibility that any nation on earth, including even Israel, is going to do what Hezekiah did, which is to renounce the military, renounce politics, renounce diplomacy, and renounce religion, and choose to rely exclusively on Yahweh, which is what Hezekiah did, and had total satisfaction. That is not going to occur in any nation on earth. Not going to occur in America, not going to occur in Europe, not going to occur even in Israel. So the Hezekiah moment has to be a personal decision that each individual makes. Is that the point you were making, Glenn? We lost Glenn there for a moment, but Don, would you agree?
That was the point I was making.
Yeah. Yeah, that is where we are. In fact, both the parables that you shared, while they were group parables, they talked about people attending, for example, a wedding and coming ill-prepared. The reality is right now we are in an individual fight for our battle for our souls. And there is no longer any collective answer. It is only an individual answer. What each individual chooses to do, and the furthest you can take this collectively is you can do your best to include your whole family in it and those you know and love. And the only collective now that means anything is the covenant, and not the new covenant, the covenant. Don, would you say this really all gets back to the point that you made last week, where the only thing that you ought to be interested in right now is adoption?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is the foundation I have found. And let me warn people, if I could take a little sidebar here for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That first step, such as Abram mm-hmm. took to become Abraham,
mm-hmm.
we don't know his background. We don't know anything about him, but he must have been somewhat what we would call now Torah observant, even though there is no mention of it, and he wasn't there at that time. But that first step must have cost him, because he only left with three people, one of which perished along the way.
Yes, Father.
And yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from experience in the last 8-9 years since I've known you, I can verify that my first steps away from Jesus,
mm-hmm.
quote,
yes,
was extremely painful. Extremely painful from my family, from my friends, from all of my religious connections that I had, with a lot of work-based programs that I was working with here. Mm-hmm. I was cast out from all of them,
yeah.
including my family.
And we should make sure our listeners understand that when you put Jesus in quotes, what you're talking about is the religious caricature. The Jesus of the Christian religion is a religious caricature. He does not exist. He is modeled after Dionysus. And if you're unwilling to walk away from the Jesus of Christianity, then you have no opportunity to be adopted. 100% of those who are adopted into the covenant are those who have walked away from religion. And the most prevalent religion in the West is Christianity, and it's based upon a caricature, an artificial construct, where the Christian Jesus is based almost entirely on Dionysus.
Yes, and my argument with you early on is what convinced me that I didn't know it at the time, but I had already been adopted because of what I had been doing. And once I realized I was adopted, my whole attitude in life changed. And young adopted people need to realize that that first step could be very, very painful, but trust in Yahweh and the Torah. The Torah especially, reading the Torah and interpreting the Torah and writing down and verifying what you have done really brought me back to you, or back to Yahweh, and convinced me. And then I met Frank, and Frank adopted me.
Yeah, it is interesting that just as the Hezekiah story has Hezekiah's first act of getting rid of all vestiges of religion in Yehudah, since Yehudah means related to Yah and to relate to Yah, it does speak of what we are to do individually if we want to be related to Yah. The first thing we have to do is to disassociate from religion and politics. In the case of Abram, Yahweh said, walk away from your country. His country was Babylon. And God goes through great lengths to tell us both in Yashayah and Yirmiyah, as well as Daniel, what Babylon represents. And Babylon represents the integration of religion and politics. You know, the first, to save his children from slavery, Yahweh had to free them from Egypt. Egypt was the epicenter of the integration of religion, politics, militarism, and economic schemes. He saved them from those things. He took them away from those things. And that step is scary for a lot of people.
Oh, yes. Oh, very, very. And painful. And painful.
Yes, it is. Now, the pain and the scariness of walking away from patriotism and politics and this mindset. I mean, you won't find that there's even 1 in 1,000 people in America that will recognize that our military is counterproductive. You won't find as many as 1 in 1,000 people who will recognize that you ought not be involved in politics because both sides are rotten. And you won't find very many people who will overtly say that religion, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, are all means to take people away from God. And so when you take that step and you come to acknowledge those things, you are isolating yourself from the preponderance of people. And that's very scary initially, and is painful initially when those people are also friends and family.
Yes.
But, once you've done that, and you say, Hezekiah did, said, I'm going to trust Yahweh, the rewards are overwhelming. And
overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yes.
The comfort, the satisfaction, the enlightenment.
Yes.
The understanding, all of the things that are made available to you as a child of the covenant on the other side are it's to say that it is vastly superior to what you let go doesn't do it justice.
No.
Now, can you imagine? You know, here's a world where literally the world is on the precipice of engaging in mass annihilation. And it's going to spread not just in Iraq and Syria, but around the world. The world is on the precipice of beginning a 15 to 18 year campaign of extinction. And God has an answer where you have zero concern about any of it. You don't have to worry about or fret about or even think about your salvation from it. Not even going to cross your mind.
Nope, not at all.
And it's so spectacular once you come to recognize that the focus is being adopted into the covenant family and recognizing that it's then Dad's responsibility to take care of you and Dad just happens to be God, that at that point you recognize that all of the thrill of living, all of the thrill of being part of this relationship, it isn't in the salvation. Don't even think about it. It's in the enjoyment of learning. It's in the enjoyment of sharing. It's the enjoyment of growing. And that becomes the focus. And you know, salvation, who cares if I'm going to be saved? But you don't even bother to think about it. That's how remarkable the transformation is from having no hope of salvation to not even being concerned about it. That's pretty profound.
Oh, it's more than profound. It's a complete new lifestyle. And I can say this for a fact, that little bit of wandering I did after doing those massive searches was replaced with a comfort zone from my mother, who watches over me every day. And realizing that suddenly was the greatest, I think, the second, third greatest, fourth greatest gift I've ever been given. The first was life.
Yep.
And the second was my Nesama.
Mm-hmm.
The third would be the Word.
Mm-hmm.
And then understanding the Word, I realized that the, quote, Christian Holy Ghost is a crock of crap. That was my mother.
Yeah.
That was my mother. She's the set apart. Right. And I've been given a set apart from the Father, which is her.
Yeah.
And by the way, she watches over me.
Yeah.
She watches over me every...
Right. From God's perspective, the set-apart spirit is part of him, set apart from him to serve us. But from our perspective, the set-apart spirit sets us apart from the world to make us part of Yahweh's family. And so the set-apart spirit is the maternal aspect of Yahweh's nature. And she is with us every step of the way. We'll be back in a moment. It is a profound insight. It's not something that most people understand. But Yahweh models the very covenant that he is offering. He created humankind so that we would model it as well. So with Yahweh, he is our Heavenly Father. He takes part of his spirit, sets it apart, and provides the maternal aspect of his nature with all feminine characteristics to nurture us, to protect us, to enlighten us. And so Yahweh manifests himself as the set-apart spirit, as our spiritual mother, while he is our Heavenly Father. And then when he takes on human form, when he sets apart a part of his nature in the material realm, that's Yahusha, the firstborn child of this covenant. So God himself represents the very covenant that he is offering. And then he created us so that we would understand what he is offering. So, you know, he created us in such a way that men and women come together as husband and wife in marriage, becoming mother and father, and building a home and raising our children within that home, nurturing them, caring for them, trying to help them become all they can be. And so then in his Torah, he begins his Torah by focusing on the covenant, on his relationship with Abraham and how he's offering Abraham and Sarah, his wife, the opportunity to conceive a child, Yishak, which means laughter, and how they can then raise that child to be not only part of their family, but part of the covenant family. It's the same story repeated in God's nature, in his Torah, and with the very way that we are constructed. You think that's by chance, Don and Glenn, or you think that's all by design?
Glenn, you shoot it.
Yeah, I would think it certainly seems like the design. Of course, I was sort of chuckling to myself as you were saying that, because humanity, and apart from God,
yes,
think that's an anthropomorphic projection of us. You know, who was it, Goldemeyer, who said that Yahweh created men in his own image and man returned the favor.
Yes.
Kind of made me wonder.
Yeah, well, it's true. But in most religions, man creates God in man's image. That's why the Christian God is no more or no less than the man. That's what we do. And in this particular case, this is what Yahweh tells us. Yahweh tells us that he is our Heavenly Father, and he describes the Ruach Kodesh as our spiritual mother, and he speaks of the firstborn child being Yahusha. That is God's testimony as to who he is and what he's like. And then when we read the 119th Psalm, Dode, who is we've changed to David, he came to the conclusion, he said, you know, God, you created me in exactly this way so that I would recognize who you are and what you're offering. Even to the point that it's not just family, but God created humankind to be upright, you know, on our feet so that we could stand with God. We're not groveling beneath him or are bowing down. We're on our feet, engaged in with him. So yeah, it is true that God represents himself as the covenant. The Torah opens with his purpose in creating us, which is inviting us to the covenant. And then we were modeled after the very nature of God in terms of family, home, and marriage and the raising of children. It is the same story. And in that way, you know, go ahead.
I tend to think of Yahweh ultimately as being transcendent of the gender he creates, you know, that we say
yes.
He, because like he knows, we are so used to saying he, she, you know, mm-hmm. Certainly not. You know. So, I mean, I ultimately think that God, you know, Yahweh is one, you know,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And that he's conscious and transcendent of gender, but creates gender at,
yes.
You know, as part of his creation and then communicates to us in this way so that we can understand, you know, to give us context.
Male and female, he created them in his image. He created them. Yahweh doesn't have gender the way that we think of gender, but he certainly manifests himself as Heavenly Father, spiritual mother, and as child. One God manifesting himself in each of these ways so that we could come to participate in his covenant family. Thank you, guys. I look forward to being with you this time on Monday.